Let's head over to the Zoom line where we have Mr. Joe Sinnott on the line with us. Not only is he the president, CEO, and chief bottle washer for Witting Partners, but also he's the host of the Energy Detox podcast. Imagine a new season is going to be starting here any day now, if I'm tracking your past podcasts, if you will. Kids are back in school, so you've got a little bit of some newfound time on your hand in terms of, not newfound time, just redirection of time. And today we're going to talk about the NFL season. We're going to talk a little bit about how that plays into the corporate world, if you will. We had a little bit of a kerfuffle with some communications down in Miami, Florida. We also are going to do a movie review a little bit later on, Friday Night Lights, maybe preview Armageddon for the next time we talk, because I love that idea of talking about Armageddon. But how are you doing today, sir?
Well, again, Jason, all four kids of the Sinnott household are in school. So I think I can probably speak on behalf of my wife, we're doing just fine today, Jason.
Well, we should probably start off first by asking, you know, when time changes, whether the kids go to school or like me, I was 15 minutes late because I was in a sales meeting that went long and I didn't bring my phone into the sales meeting. Here I thought I was doing the people in the room a solid by not bringing my phone in, but here I didn't expect it to go more than an hour and a half, and it ended up going close to 2 hours. And so, Doc, let's start off a little bit about when time gets away, how you deal with that professionally, because sometimes time can be outside of your realm, if you will. Someone else is controlling your time, but here my time is dedicated to you during a certain time, if you will. The school has your kids during a certain time, if you will. A lot of times, you know, these corporate meetings, somebody will talk a little bit longer than, you know, time doesn't exist to them. There's always one person in the room that time doesn't exist to. And so let's start off there a little bit. How do you deal with that? Because most people are understanding, but sometimes it can bleed into other parts of your day.
Yeah, it's a good question. And actually, it's something I brought up yesterday with a group that I was working with, a client. And had a couple of people in the room, and some people were late to this meeting, to this discussion. And so actually before the other people showed up, we actually had a little conversation about basically creating templates, creating ways to respond when other people are running late or when you're running late. So it's a little bit of preparation. I guess if you want to use the school analogy, Jason, you could say, hey, you know, my wife and I, theoretically, we can have a sigh of relief and say, all right, well, we're good for the next couple of hours. We can plan our business. But if the phone rings, if something happens, you know, we can have in the back of our mind how we're going to respond. And it's no different in the corporate world, right? If you're going to be late or if somebody's, you know, rambling on, you know, you could tell yourself ahead of time. It doesn't take a lot of time to almost come up with a template and say, all right, if this happens, here's how I'm going to respond. Now, what those responses are, again, they could be varied, right? They could be, you know, a sort of a canned line. Maybe it's a small joke that you interject to gently kind of bring people back and remind them of the time. But at the end of the day, Jason, it all comes down to preparation, finding something that works for you and having it ready in your holster so that you can pull it out when you need it. And from a leadership standpoint, quite frankly, that's the difference many times between, you know, a successful leader, a sustainable leader who in the moment can redirect, and those who are just kind of playing it by ear and find themselves getting frustrated because they're checking their watch and they have another meeting, you know, afterwards. So again, preparation, Jason, is the key. And I spent a lot of time both as groups and certainly with individuals working on those templates, so to speak, so that, you know, when it comes time to respond, they're at the ready. Pull them out of your toolbox.
So we're going to segue into the Brian Flores Tua. I cannot pronounce his last name for the life of me, but the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, Brian Flores was the coach when he first came, and Tua was either on a podcast or he was interviewed by somebody, and he did not have very kind things to say about his former boss, his former supervisor, if you will. Very common in the professional world. Sometimes you even, and we'll get to this in a moment, but sometimes you even see people on a social media platform do what Tua did, basically call out the former supervisor, in this case, the coach, saying it was not a good relationship because of XYZ. But let's start off by just dealing with management friction, because coexistence and cohesiveness in a workplace, that has to be near the top of things to do, Joe, doesn't it? I mean, in order to be successful, shouldn't you have coexistence and cohesiveness with your supervisors, your employees, your management, if you will? Or can you be successful without it?
I think actually the key word there that you mentioned is friction. So, you know, it's one thing to, I don't know, maybe not be on the same page on some of the nitty gritty, some of the details, but, you know, if all of you aren't moving towards some common goal or some understood goal, you know, again, if there's a lot of friction in place that's preventing you from moving forward and progressing, then yeah, you're doomed to fail. And I think in the case of Tua and Flores, you know, clearly Flores's take was, well, you know, you don't, well, again, I think we need to be careful. You know, per Tua, Flores's take was, hey, Tua, you know, you don't really belong here. So, you know, at that point, well, what's the end goal for Tua, right? I mean, how, what are you working towards at that point? And that was sort of Tua's take, which is, hey, you know, how does it feel when you show up and your superior is basically saying, hey, look, you know, you don't belong here. You know, essentially you're not going to succeed here. And at that point, things grind to a halt, right? That's friction. That is the worst kind of friction. Versus, again, on the flip side, and then again, this is what we're taking to his word for it here, but, you know, versus his current coach, what is it, McDaniel, who he says is basically saying, hey, look, you know, I believe in you. And what are all the ways to move forward, to overcome some of that friction? So again, you can have your differences, Jason, but, you know, what I see, especially in the corporate world, is so often the whether it's the manager, the leader, the coach, if you will, you know, they don't take the time to actually say, okay, well, what's the end goal here? It's not just winning as a team, but I mean, from a Tua standpoint, if there is no room to grow, if there's nothing to progress towards, well, then you're wasting a whole bunch of time and energy. So that's what I see. Again, I think that whether it's sports, whether it's the corporate world, that's what I see as a failure to identify what the end goal is and work towards it. And, you know, unfortunately, in this case, it was sort of a, it sounded like a shutting of the door on Tua by Flores.
In a former life, I was a magazine publisher, and our clients actually were newspapers. So we would produce a magazine for the newspaper to produce non-traditional revenue. Newspapers generally did not get building, buying, decorating, landscape, and remodeling, because that was more of a high ticket item. People would save for it. The newspaper had a shorter shelf life. Magazines could really show full color. It was more of a passive versus the hard news, soft news. So we introduced a non-traditional revenue for the newspaper that worked really well. Now, one of the things that we loved to do was we would take bets on, okay, when we meet with the publisher, let's bet on where did he come from? Did he come from sales? Did he come from editorial? Did he come from circulation? Because their management style generally came from their pedigree. If somebody came from sales, they were generally the first ones to take this non-traditional revenue source on. If somebody came from the editorial side, they were really resistant because they didn't want to upset the quality of what they had built editorially and the trust that they had spent so many years building. If they came from circulation, they'd look at it like, oh, this is going to increase our circulation numbers, which is going to help sales, which is going to help. So everybody actually brought in a positive, but we had to change our direction, how we approached our style. Because if somebody did come from sales, hey, we could just focus on the bottom line. If somebody came from editorial, we had to focus on, hey, this is going to increase your readership. This is going to increase your trust factor, et cetera, et cetera. When I look at the Flores Tua situation, you know, Flores is a defensive coach, and he's talking about an offensive person. He also came from the Bill Belichick school of, hey, listen, I'm going to just beat you down with some very hard words, toughen up like Tom Brady did. You know, Tom Brady, who was with Belichick, he always said that, you know, Bill was hard on me. And Tom, apparently Brady was built to let things roll off his back. Tua might have came from a different school of, hey, I'm going to be coddled. I need to be coddled type of a thing. So talk to me about pedigree in the management corporate world, because I think that is one of the most under-discussed topics in terms of management style and leadership styles. Is where did they come from? Did they come from the school of hard knocks? Did they come from the entitlement academy? Where did this manager come from? Where did this CEO come from? Let's talk about that, Joe, because I really believe that is a very important topic for anybody of any age to really digest.
Yeah. And again, I appreciate you sharing your anecdotes, because at the end of the day, it comes down to your audience, right? I mean, that's as cliche as it is, the better you understand your audience, where they've come from, you know, the lens that they're looking at things through, you know, where they want to head, well, the better off you're going to be when it comes to motivating them, selling something to them, whether it's a, you know, a playbook or a game plan or something you want their eyeballs on. And I guess, Jason, I mean, that's also why I was a little hesitant, again, to take Tua's words, you know, just at face value, because, you know, you don't know what Brian Flores actually said. We know what Tua heard, but from an ownership standpoint, you know, maybe Tua heard something that somebody else would hear from Flores and would find it incredibly motivating. You know, to your point, successful coaches that, you know, have a certain style, if Tua's going into this and isn't asking the question, hey, in what ways is what he's telling me actually good for me, right? In what ways is him sort of setting the bar and poking me and telling me, hey, look, I don't think you're good enough to succeed here. You know, what are all the fruit that can come out of that? Now, he might conclude, Tua, he might conclude that, hey, look, you know, this is a bunch of, this is not a very positive way to approach things, Jason. But coddled or not, regardless of where Tua is coming from on all this, you know, he needs to ask himself, hey, how can I build, how can I grow upon what's in front of me, the resources in front of me, this coach who's in front of me? And again, I don't know if he did that or not, but that's what I coach people to say before reaching a conclusion. And on the flip side, Jason, from a Flores standpoint, again, regardless of what he actually said, clearly he failed in understanding his audience. I mean, he failed, right? I mean, at the end of the day, Tua clearly does not have respect for Flores as a coach, as a leader. And I think from an ownership standpoint, again, regardless of what was said, the one of the few things that Flores has said in response to these revelations or accusations or whatever is, hey, look, I, Flores, am now asking myself how I can grow from this opportunity. What are all the ways I can grow from this? Whether it's true or not, there's clearly a narrative out there. Clearly, I failed in communication. What are all the ways to grow? And that is, I mean, that is the universal conclusion that adds value in any circumstance. So again, I think I've probably, you know, meandered away from your initial question, Jason, but in terms of, yeah, understanding where people are coming from, before you try to go through and you know, read a biography of every person that you're interacting with, the first question is, how can I build upon the person that's in front of me? How can I use them to grow and to develop? And if you don't start with that fundamental question, Jason, and all you're doing is trying to paint them into some sort of, you know, black and white, good leader, bad leader, good coach, bad coach, good player, bad player bucket, then again, you're doomed for a pretty frustrating approach to, you know, to a career, whether it's in sports or in business.
So we're going to talk about the high road and the low road in just a second. You alluded to Flores's comments about learning. He's going to basically use it as a learning experience at the end of the day. But before we get into that, I want to talk about feelings and facts. Because to me, that's kind of what I see going on here. And I used to bring up reading emails, because whatever mood the person is in when they read an email, that's how they're going to interpret it so often. If somebody is in a bad mood and they read an email, 99% of the time, the person who sends the email is not telling the person off. They're not trying to say the person is XYZ. they're just trying to do a quick, hey, I'm passing you a note type thing. I'm a brevity, if you will. So when I look at Flores, I think of that short staccato type of presentation, because I'm a head coach. I'm really a defensive coach. So I see more problems on the defense. Hey, kid, we hired you to be a leader out there, and now I got to hold your hand. Mm-hmm. Now I'm looking at it more from the feeling side, to where Tua, you know what, star athlete in high school, star athlete in college, everything handed to him. He probably didn't even have to tie his own shoes, right? So all of a sudden, he came into a culture change. How often does that happen, Joe, where the star salesman is now going to go to a new company, or the star editor is going to go to a new newspaper? Whatever that dynamic is, sometimes the feelings do not integrate into a new establishment like the old feelings did, or the old way did. So the culture clash, man, that can be left up to interpretation, just like a person reading a morning email or a late afternoon email. Let's talk about the feelings and facts, the interpretations of the culture clash. How does one overcome that? Because, man, that is an ego jump the average person is not ready to overcome.
Yeah, well, the short answer is, you know, determining what narratives out there you need to address head on. And again, that takes a little bit of humility sometimes, but, you know, first as an individual to say, all right, I'm jumping into this new position. You know, what are all the things that could be sort of cast at me? You know, what are all the ways that people could look at me and interpret me or misinterpret me that I want to address head on? And again, if you ask yourself that question, you're probably going to come up with a couple. And if you ask some people around you and you do it in a very sincere way, you know, they're going to offer up some things too. But what happens is, you know, people tend to just jump in. They keep doing what they were always doing. Nobody's there to coach or to challenge them and say, hey, what are some ways that people could, again, misinterpret or correctly interpret your actions and create this narrative that it's now going to take a whole bunch of time, a whole bunch of energy to reconcile down the road. So again, it's doing a little bit of homework up front, but it's asking yourself the right questions to say, all right, well, you know, again, what is my audience likely to say about me? And again, if somebody were in a position where they had been coddled or everything was, you know, presented to them on a silver plate. And again, I don't know, you know, to his background, I don't know if that's, you know, fair for him, but I mean, for a lot of people who have had success, who have earned that success. And again, they're walking into a new team, a new environment. They too, again, might be up against people who say, oh man, you know, this person thinks that he or she is just, you know, can walk on water and all this. Well, if somebody has the guts to tell you ahead of time that, you know, this is sort of the aura that you might give off, well, then it's up to you to find a way to nip that in the bud immediately and kind of take the wind out of the sails, if you will, of any sort of antagonist, anybody that might not be on the same page as you, to create that cohesion that you talked about a couple of minutes ago, Jason. So again, I mean, I'm speaking, you know, from the work that I do with individuals from a coaching standpoint, and a lot of times I'm helping them, again, control that narrative as early as possible. So that's my number one piece of advice for anybody that's shifting gears, changing teams: identify those potential narratives and address them before they become an issue.
And again, we have no idea what was said and what the actual realities are behind the Tua Flores situation is. So we're just making comparisons of what we've seen in the media, what some of the barroom chatter is, what some of the social media chatter is, and converting that and bringing that into the corporate world, into the business world, on how coaching does work. Because managers, supervisors, CEOs, they are a coach at the end of the day. Craig Bohl, who used to coach for North Dakota State University, now is at the University of Wyoming, coached Josh Allen with the Buffalo Bills. He called himself the CEO of the team. He said he wasn't really a coach. He was more of a CEO. And so it's interesting how that gets used back and forth. Mm-hmm. But when I take a look at the way Flores handled the situation, I would say he definitely took the high road on that. When I take a look at the way Tua addressed the situation, I guess we'd have to say that's more of the low road, but was it really? Is being honest the low road? And that's a hard thing to come across. Listen, I've been in the media for 30 years, and I can say the exact same thing and get blamed for both sides. And so, again, it goes back to that email interpretation. How is the user feeling in that moment? They're going to interpret the situation. But when we take a look at the high road and the low road, there was a time when you got fired or when you lost the job, man, that was a deep, dark secret. Now people are posting on LinkedIn, hey, I'm looking for a new job, right? So we've changed that a little bit. But there are times when people will say, don't ever trust this person, man. This boss is a real jag off. You know, I mean, so the low road and the high road has changed a little bit too. But at the end of the day, in this situation, we would say, okay, Tua took the low road because he called out the coach for something that could be one-sided. We did not get the other point of view. Flores took the high road because he said, hey, I'm going to learn from this. So let's talk a little bit about the high road and the low road, because it is open to interpretation, but there are some central themes that we can discuss.
Yeah. So I guess from a linguistic standpoint, Jason, again, and I'll use high road, low road, and, you know, here and there. But the problem with high road and low road is, again, it creates this sort of, you know, good versus bad narrative. And you're trying to, you know, almost determine, you know, who is right and who is wrong, as if it's some sort of binary. My preference in this situation is to look at it in terms of ownership. So you could say, all right, you know, who is taking more ownership of the situation? That clearly was not, you know, ideal. I don't think anybody would argue that. But, you know, who's taking more ownership of this? And again, I think you could argue objectively that Brian Flores's response shows more ownership. He's acknowledging again that there was ways that, you know, he could have done things differently and he could have grown without getting into the weeds. Whereas Tua, by nature of calling out his former coach, you know, that's not necessarily starting from a place of ownership, right? Again, factual or not, it doesn't really matter. It, you know, if you're starting the conversation to say, hey, look, during my however many years, was it 2 years under Flores? You know, during those 2 years, you know, there's definitely things that I could have done differently as a quarterback under this coaching regime, you know, that would have allowed me to excel and do better. And, you know, there may have been some incompatibility with the other coach, but I recognize that, again, you know, there wasn't that level of cohesion that, you know, I have now with my current coach. You know, that would demonstrate more ownership. Forget high road or low road, but stick to the facts, kind of come back to himself, Tua, as a leader, and really, you know, not allow anybody to paint, you know, things as positive, negative, good, bad, high, low. So again, that's how I view these things, Jason, to your point, kind of sticking to the facts, but also kind of looking at things through that ownership lens, if you will.
I'm in Minnesota. You're in Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh, to be more precise. So my sports talk, I really enjoy listening to the Power Trip Morning Show out of Minneapolis. I try to catch it as much as I can. They do a lot of a football talk, and they were big fans of Brian Flores before any of this Tua stuff broke. So when it kind of came out, they were very hesitant to say anything until Flores said something. You've got your Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, kind of that whole thing going on there, to where people can be very opinionated without knowing anything about the situation. So when I take a look at the narrative, I also realize that when you try to control the narrative, a lot of times you're protecting your good old boys. You're protecting your corporate country club. You're protecting your clique, if you will, which, well, that's good if you're in it, but if you're outside of it, it's tough to break into. Let's talk about the corporate country club, or the clique, if you will. Let's talk about, in Brian Flores' situation, new scenery, a new direction. Because for Flores, he has created a new path here to where he has garnered respect from his immediate community, his surrounding, to where they really enjoy him. I didn't hear one bad thing about him up until this Tua situation. And now, you know, let's talk about that, because sometimes you can develop this corporate clique or this country club, good old boy network internally, if you will. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you can't break through it, a new scenery is sometimes needed. And it's unfortunate to say, but that's how the case might be. So how can one identify if that's going on? And I'm not saying that's happening in the Tua situation, but it's interesting when you throw one guy under the bus and prop another one up. That's generally how corporate cliques and corporate country clubs happen. And let's talk about that a little bit, because it is a real thing, and it's not an easy topic to discuss. A lot like whistleblowers. Nobody likes to talk about that kind of stuff. But at the same time, they do exist. Putting your head in the sand is never healthy. Healthy conversations are healthy, Joe.
They are. And I like to think, Jason, that all of our conversations here on The Crude Life are anything but unhealthy, right? We are as healthy as could be here. So there's a lot of different elements of what you just talked about that I see regularly in the corporate world and from a coaching standpoint. And I'd say the biggest, Jason, is that when individuals fail or are clearly, you know, not having success in some area, a lot of times it's because they were set up to fail, or a lot of times it's because they were put into a position where they're not necessarily playing to their strengths. And then when it comes to sort of, you know, what you're describing is the corporate cliques, if you will, what's interesting is, you know, those who are sort of protected, when they do fail, it's sort of, oh, you know what? That wasn't the best fit anyway. And, you know, we're going to move them to somewhere else. They almost get a pass, versus those who are not, and they fail again. You know, sometimes from an ownership standpoint, they fail because they didn't do a very good job and they should have done a good job. And it's pretty cut and dry. But many times, again, they were almost set up to fail. And again, I don't know Brian Flores' specific situation, but perhaps, you know, if he were, you know, had remained or like he is now in a purely defensive role, you know, playing to his strengths, you know, this, he would have not gone through all of this, right? He may have had continued success. He might not have had this narrative that he needed to overcome. I don't know. But from a corporate standpoint, that's the first place I look, which is, okay, how are you dealing with individuals who clearly had some subpar performance? Is there consistency there? And if not, why? Did somebody get some sort of, you know, were they admitted to some sort of club? Were they given some sort of, you know, golden child status that gives them immunity when they do something wrong? Or are they going to be cast aside because they're not part of that club? And what is the root of the problem? Is it because they were put into a position where people knew there was risk and they ignored it? And now when, you know, a fairly logical and likely outcome occurs, that being the failure of an individual, you know, the people that put them in that position are apt to say, oh, well, that person's no good, even though they may have had tremendous value if they were put into the right role. So again, that's, like you said, there's a lot to that, but I just am speaking to, you know, hearing you talk there, that is one way that I see this whole sort of, you know, clickiness manifest itself in terms of the long-term success of people who hit a rough patch, if you will, and you know, have some failures that, you know, they have to overcome.
When these types of things happen, whether it's somebody posting on social media that so-and-so supervisor is, you know, XYZ in a negative way, or Tua says what he says about Brian Flores. Now the Minnesota Vikings have to deal with Tua's words that he said. Let's talk about the impact a little bit, because these are unintended consequences. I'm sure when Tua said the things he did, he wasn't thinking about the defense for the Minnesota Vikings. He was thinking about himself and his head coach, and that he probably didn't go very far beyond that. And I don't know if he predetermined this or it was something in real time, if you will, it just was bottled up and it came out. But let's talk about the unintended consequences, because like I said, sometimes people will go on social media, or they will shoot their mouth off at the bar, or they will go to a conference and they might say things, you know, that may not be the most positive for their workplace. Let's talk about that unintended consequences. How do you deal with it? And how do you address it? Because I'm sure the Minnesota Vikings probably had a meeting with the defense, or I have no idea. In my mind, I see Flores standing up in front of the team and just saying, hey, learning experience, I'm going to move on. And now I'm going to go tell the media the same exact thing. No idea if that happened, but in my mind, that's probably what happened, because you don't want your safety and your defensive back in the background chitter chattering. You don't want your two salespeople in the back chitter chattering about something someone else said that you've never met before and have never been a part of your culture. Let's talk a little bit about how to address that, because that is a tough, tough deal when the outside tries to manage your internal.
Yeah. And the short answer, Jason, is approach it with gratitude. You know, I'm in the feedback business, if you will. I spend a lot of my time gathering feedback from various stakeholders within organizations so that I can help individuals, again, get better, have a better understanding of the way that their actions, their words are being interpreted or misinterpreted. So again, I rely on gathering feedback that I can then, translate into some actionable steps, some actionable insights for the people that I'm working with. And, I'd say 100% of the time, the people that I'm working with love the feedback. They're grateful for the feedback. Sometimes it's very tough to hear, but ultimately my goal is to get to the point where organizations, have that feedback going back and forth. It's open, it's honest, it's transparent. And again, I'm not even part of the equation, because that's what's necessary. And when that feedback is flowing, what's the number one response? It shouldn't be defensiveness, of course, in trying to explain it away. It should be, thank you. Thank you for that feedback. Thank you for sharing how you felt. Again, whether it's true or not, the feeling is a fact, so to speak, right? Whether Tua was correct in his interpretation or what he heard from Flores, the fact is that that is how he interpreted it. And Flores, when he's addressing his team now in Minnesota, can say, hey guys, I know you've probably heard all about this and the rumblings and everything else. And let me start by saying, I want feedback. I am glad that Tua shared what he shared, because it gave me an opportunity to think, say, hey, what am I saying that, again, is maybe not landing, or is perhaps being, damaging to individuals or to the team. So to start with gratitude and not from a defensive standpoint, no pun intended, given Brian Flores's role, of course, that's the healthiest way to respond, basically, Jason. And again, like I said before, that takes the wind out of the sails of anybody that's going to be sitting there looking for, almost expecting you to go on the defensive and go into some sort of, tit for tat with, he said, she said kind of stuff. You start with gratitude and you disarm all of those naysayers, and they're going to pay attention. And again, you want to talk about taking the high road, as you said earlier. Well, that's a pretty simple formula there for taking the high road, Jason.
You might have just answered my next question. And stick around, folks. We got a movie review coming up in just a moment as part of our Paramount Plus deal with The Crude Life. And when we look at feelings and facts, right? Because that was kind of the thing, where feelings over facts. That's how the phrase has been in a number of different things. One of the things that I noticed over the last decade, and now keep in mind, I'm Generation X. So we were not allowed feelings. We had to throw dirt on it, right? If we were upset, we had to go throw dirt on it and just move on. Well, your generation, Joe, and I'm not pointing at you, but like I said, this is something I noticed from about 10 years ago. A lot of people in business meetings and professional settings would start a sentence with, I feel. And as somebody who's educated linguistically with speech and communications, that is a persuasive element, because now you've taken out fact and you've ushered in feelings. And so if you go against that feelings, you're kind of a bad man. You're kind of a bad person. So the generation that grew up with having to throw dirt on our feelings and move on with life, well, we were now managing and supervising people that would start a sentence with, I feel. And that is really how I look at this with the Tua and Flores situation, to where here's this short staccato, deal with it, we got to move on, Bill Belichick kind of coaching style, with somebody who was taught that their feelings matter, versus somebody that, hey, live with your feelings, punk, deal with it, right? Mm-hmm. How can somebody deal with that generational clash? Not only is it a culture clash, but it's really a generational clash of upbringing, of pedigree, to where when somebody starts a sentence with, I feel, now they've just captured the whole narrative of the room. Because if you go against that feeling, well, now you're hurting their feelings. And so everybody has been trained not to hurt anybody's feelings. So it's almost like kind of manipulative, really. It's very persuasive. And I don't discount the people for saying that, because again, it was like a generational thing to where no matter if you were in Pittsburgh or Minneapolis or Austin, Texas, or Berkeley, California, people would say, I feel. So it's almost like it was a pop culture training type of a thing. I don't know, but it's a definite phenomenon. And it's something that people do not talk about, how this generational training is just trying to coexist. And, you know, these are two extremes. Again, throw dirt on your feelings, start a sentence with, I feel. There's no right answer here, Joe. This is all pop quiz. This is really a pop quiz more than anything. How would you deal with somebody in the back room raised their hand and you're at some corporate coaching session and you are not ready for this and you got a room full of, you know, 60-year-olds down to 21-year-olds. So you got all these different point of views. How do you tiptoe through those tulips, man?
Well, Jason, as a geriatric millennial, you know, I think I'm better positioned than many to answer this. You know, we're smack dab in the middle there. You know, we're on the older end of the millennial spectrum there. So, you know, part of my job is to marry those two worlds and be on guard against potential conflicts. But in all seriousness, you know, in the moment, addressing that, again, obviously that's tough. You know, a lot of what I do is sitting in those rooms and watching for opportunities, if you will, you know, for people to say, hey, look, you know, for me afterwards to say, hey, you know, I noticed you said this and you said it in this way. You know, how do you think it might have landed if you kind of shifted things into more of sort of fact-based versus feelings-based, you know, if you just kind of stuck to the facts, because, you know, it kind of noticed things went off the rails there when it seemed like there was more sort of speculation and some softer stuff. And again, getting people to sort of understand how things could have looked, Jason, after the fact, is the key to actually change some of the behaviors and some of their wordings. Let them sort of play out that scenario. Now, another thing that I see quite often in my coaching is that there are some seasoned leaders, if you will, it's a polite way of saying, you know, older leaders who, you know, they have this story, this narrative about them that, you know, they have their methods, you know, they do these things, they truly care. And, you know, you give them time, whether it's months, years, a decade, and you really see that this individual cares. It just takes time to really know them. And again, it's amazing how often I hear that. Again, you hear it in sports too, right? I think, you know, is it Buddy Ryan was one of the infamous ones, right, from the Bears. You know, one of those. He was tough and to the point, right? You talk about that sort of, you know, staccato approach. But at the end of the day, hey, everybody loved him, right? And they knew that he loved you. But it took so much time to get there. And it took so much energy from people to say, oh, you don't understand him. You know, you got to get to know him. It just takes time. This is his process. And what I spend a decent amount of time now doing, Jason, with some of, again, those seasoned leaders, is asking a question to say, hey, look, what might happen if some of that approach were shortened? If that time frame for them to understand how much you trust them and to kind of get their trust in you more solidified early on and not have to rely on advocates to explain you know, what would it look like? Because there's a lot of leaders out there that, you know, they have a method to their madness and it's this long-term thing and they're pushing and they're testing and they're doing all of these things. And, you know, they have the results to prove that at the end of the day, it works out. But getting some of those individuals to say, all right, well, if you were to accelerate that timeline, if you were to shift your communication a little bit to get people on board sooner and not, again, have to have those advocates for you, what would it look like? And it's amazing sometimes, Jason, where they, again, they have to dream a little bit and say, huh, well, if that were the case, you know, I suppose we might see results sooner, or, you know, I suppose we might have less turnover. And again, I'm realistic. Say, okay, well, what would the trade-offs be if you shifted your approach a little bit and maybe you weren't as, you know, in their face, or you didn't test them as much for months or a year or whatever? You know, again, I recognize there's trade-offs. What are those trade-offs? Let's quantify those. You know, what are the long-term implications if you were a little bit softer, so to speak? And that's, from a coaching standpoint, how I get individuals to consider trying new things. Again, I'm not there necessarily recommending, I'm not advising, but getting them to just say, all right, well, what would happen if I approached things a little bit differently from a communication standpoint. If I injected a little bit more of the feelings than the facts, or vice versa, as the case may be. So that's, again, a little bit of insight into how I work with individuals to help them understand the possibilities or the implications or the impacts if they were to take a different approach, Jason.
Now we're going to do a movie review as part of our Paramount Plus content agreement, where we're talking about some oil and gas movies, and we're going to stay in the world of football because there's actually an oil and gas football movie called Friday Night Lights. And it was based on a book out of Odessa, Texas. And it really talked about how a community can turn football into the community, if you will, the good, the bad, the ugly. And it's a very interesting movie from a lot of different perspectives. And Billy Bob Thornton stars in it. And it shows how, I guess my takeaway, Joe, from Friday Night Lights was, it shows how you can really take a high school activity and turn it into a business. Whether it makes money or not, I don't know. But my guess is it was a, you know, when you fill out the football stadiums, and James Caan, who was the coach in the program, he said, you know, in one of the college classes, show me a chemistry experiment where 90,000 people show up for, right? So football is a business. That's why Craig Bohl, former coach of North Dakota State University, now with University of Wyoming, always called himself the CEO rather than a coach. And really, that was kind of my takeaway on how it really showed how high school sports can become a business, whether it's good or bad for the university or for the high school or for the student athletes or for the coaches. That's arguable. But to me, that was kind of the undertone of that movie. So it wasn't just a football movie. It wasn't just an oil and gas movie. It showed more of how an activity can become a business, and a sports business, if you will. And Joe, what did you like about the movie? What did you take away from the movie? Talk to me about what you thought about Friday Night Lights. You've seen it, correct?
I have, you know, it's been a while, but I have seen Friday Night Lights. And I guess my, you know, I think my takeaway was not necessarily on sort of the business side of things that, you know, you saw, but was expectations. You know, when I saw it, I was still in college, you know, when it first came out. And, you know, you're in college, you have expectations. Your parents have expectations. You're getting ready to enter the real world where your employer has expectations. The fans, the boosters, the parents, the coaches in, you know, West Texas, they have expectations. And most of that movie was about managing expectations, right? You know, if you're Billy Bob Thornton, the coach, you're helping to manage expectations. If you're the players, you know, you have the weight of, again, your parents, fans, the whole community, as you said, you know, their expectations weighing on you as a teenager. So, you know, I certainly view it now. And, you know, I think the impact even 20 years ago was, hey, how do you manage these expectations? You know, do you do it in such a way that is short-sighted, where if something goes south, you're done and there's no future and, you know, you failed and that's it? Or do you do it in a way that allows you to continue growing? Again, if we tie back to the Brian Flores conversation, you know, where if you do have a failure or an injury, figuratively or literally, you're still able to grow from that and progress and grow. And again, unfortunately, when you have very high expectations, and clearly the expectations there for, what was it, Permian High School or whatever the name was, you know, the expectations were to win a state championship, and anything less than that could be deemed as failure. So how do you manage that? How do you manage children, essentially, and get them to the point where, all right, if you fall short of that expectation, you're still able to keep moving forward. So again, that was sort of, you know, the lens that I viewed it through. Obviously, Jason, you know, you talk about football and even high school football essentially becoming a business or business-like. It's all about expectations, right? What are the bottom line expectations of your shareholders or stakeholders, if you will, or fans or whatever? And at the end of the day, how do you as a leader, how do you as a coach manage those? And that, again, as I view things, and certainly, you know, for myself as an individual, as a coach, and certainly the people that I work with from a leadership standpoint, that by and large is how you're being measured or how you should be measured. How do you help people manage through high expectations?
Doing a little bit of a different movie review with executive coach Joe Sinnott and Friday Night Lights. I think a lot of people might get it confused with Varsity Blues. Billy Bob Thornton was the coach in Friday Night Lights, but John Voight, man, what a great Bobby Knight style coach as far as just a hard nose. And it's so easy to get caught up on the negatives, you know, the tribal mentality that football can bring, the win at any cost, whether it's cortisone shots and an injured player or, you know, the police looking the other way when some kids get caught drinking. It's very easy to look at those negatives and those types of things. But we're here to talk about some of the learning opportunities that this movie, because remember, movies are supposed to tell us a story, right? They're supposed to have an arc, and we're supposed to have learning processes and a conclusion at the end. And really what Friday Night Lights brought at the end of the day, what Billy Bob kept trying to do is instill new members into ones that were injured, right? We had injuries happen, so we had to figure out new ways to do it, whether it's your salesman is sick, whether you lost a CEO because they took another job. At the end of the day, Billy Bob tried to bring in self-respect and honor to a team that was going through some turbulence, some you know, tribal mentality times of just singular thinking. And really, Joe, that was my takeaway in terms of the positives, was that a sense of self-respect and a sense of honor was really brought into it.
Yeah, I certainly don't disagree. In fact, I think both in the movie or in real life or at the end of the movie, you know, they allude to the fact or state the fact that, you know, that team went on to actually win and go undefeated and win state championship the next season. So again, obviously, you know, they navigated through that, and the what was the third string running back, you know, helped lead them to victory the following season. So yeah, I think that's a great interpretation. And again, I think that's the measure of a sustainable leader, right? Somebody who's able to keep moving forward without discarding the individual players, again, the figurative players in the business world, and, you know, obviously the players on the field when it comes to football. And again, that's a measure of a sustainable leader. Can you help everybody grow, or at least be on a path to growth? Clearly, again, they need to take some ownership and take some responsibility. But, you know, are you able to keep moving forward, to keep seeing success without being seen as somebody who's just using others or discarding others? Which, again, that's a whole nother theme, of course, you know, in the real world of sports, and certainly the movie world of sports, where you see individual athletes who come up, and when they're no longer needed, they're, you know, they're cast off to the side. And clearly, that's not leadership. Allowing that to happen is not leadership. So yeah, Jason, I think your assessment there, your takeaway is spot on.
We should mention, until September 21st, $2.50 a month, Paramount Plus has a special deal. We'll have the promo code and the link right here in the YouTube description, as well as the article. We'll have a link in there as well. The Ohio State University is taking on Akron Zips, I believe, tomorrow or this weekend. I'm not really quite sure, but kind of a kickoff. Big Ten football is streamed on Paramount. CBS on the ABC side is streamed on Paramount. That is my plug that I'm giving for Paramount Plus. Joe, you've got your podcast as well as your real life job, Winning Partners. So give yourself a plug and talk to us about when we can expect the next episode or the new season of the Energy Detox Podcast.
Sure. Well, the podcast will be kicking off a new season here in September, leading off this fall, if you will, is the annual Shale Insight Conference up in Erie, Pennsylvania, focused on the Marcellus Shale, put on by the Marcellus Shale Coalition. And so no shortage of hot topics there around natural gas in this part of the world, and certainly no shortage of excuses to kick off the new season of the Energy Detox with some episodes that focus on natural gas, focus on the Shale Insight Conference, and all the various players that come together in Erie. I think pushing maybe 800 people that will be there to talk about the benefits, the beauty, the impact of natural gas, especially natural gas from this part of the world. So again, can look forward to that here kicking off in a couple of weeks. In terms of the business itself, Witting Partners, again, you know, we alluded to a lot of the different things that I do on a day-to-day basis with individuals in the energy industry to help coach them through leadership, through decisions, through communication, through managing expectations. Again, all of the things that we've talked about today, Jason, I get to do that on a daily basis. I enjoy what I do. And if anybody's curious a little bit more about how I do it and my approach, then always welcome a conversation. You can head on over to wittingpartners.com, W-I-T-T-I-N-G, or of course, always happy to connect on LinkedIn and start a conversation there.